Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Jenny Hatch Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host. Today's show is a continuation of the show I did a few days ago. It's titled Introduction to the Natural Family Blog. I've been blogging now for 5 years, and when I first started, I spent a few weeks typing out all of my political philosophy in an introductory post that would hopefully help convey to anyone who was interested what my political beliefs were and what my goals were for the blog. And that introduction has largely remained the way I wrote it for the past 5 years. I first published it on July 4th, 2005, and it's been edited just a little bit over the years. I took out certain links that were broken and a few passages that didn't really fit anymore, but by and large, the whole thing has pretty much stayed the same for the past 5 years. And I'm going to begin with the portion that's titled Reformation. The first part of the introduction is an hour-long podcast that includes passages of scripture, my political background and history, my political philosophy, and also my experiences with interfacing with the medical profession. The thesis of my blog is that at some point we're going to need an amendment to the American Constitution to guarantee medical rights the same way that we guarantee religious rights. And this was articulated by a signer of the Declaration of Independence named Benjamin Rush, who was a doctor and is considered the father of modern psychiatry today. And in his quote, back then, back in the day, he made the case that we needed to have this amendment to the Constitution, and that if we didn't have it, there would be a form of medicine that would rise up and take over and deny equal privileges not only to those practicing medicine and health care, but those who wanted to purchase what those health care providers wanted to buy. This is interesting because just yesterday, my friend Sarah Buckley, who's a doctor down in Australia, posted on her Facebook that the only hospital catering and supporting home birth midwives as their medical backup in New York City in 2 weeks is going to have to shut its doors for financial reasons. And this has been a pattern throughout American history, especially the last 50 years, that whenever there was a maverick group of doctors and midwives who opened birth centers, hospitals that catered to women who wanted to have natural childbirth, that it was only a matter of time before they were sort of chased out of town or shut down for one reason or another. And this happened here in Boulder, Colorado, where I live, the birth center that had been so lovingly put in place by a group of independent thinking doctors and midwives had to shut down after a short span of time because it just the medical people were just too powerful. So this is happening. You know, the promotion of home birth is the number one goal of my blog. And I've predicted on my blog that we will, in America, see the day come when home births midwives are completely shut out from the practice of childbirth, and I believe that day is fast approaching, and that the only answer for families in the short term is going to be taking personal responsibility for every facet of their own health care, and especially for their childbirth. So this is something that I've come to over many years of study and research, and it's a deeply held belief that not only will we parents who take this stance and just say, no, we're not going to bow down to the medical gods need to do this, but our doing this will force them to their knees, literally, to where they just, you know, there will be so many of us doing this that they can't lock us all up, so they'll have to stop and change the laws. Either that's going to happen or so many women will just finally say, I've had enough, not going to take it anymore. They'll leave the medical form of birth. But I still don't see that happening for many years, like 50, 100 years. So that's going to be down the road. But for the short term, I do want to challenge anybody listening, if you're planning on being a mother, a father, to take personal responsibility for your life. You may feel like that degree on the wall of your doctor or even your midwife's medical examining room means that they know a whole lot about birth, but generally what it means is that they know a whole lot about interventions and a lot of medical procedures and drugs that can be used to help when things go wrong. And it's my contention that most of the time things go right, and that if we just get out of the way, the vast majority of the babies in the world and in America, especially where we have plenty of clean water and fresh food and everybody's into exercise and yoga and taking good care of themselves, the vast majority of us could easily give birth at home if that's what we wanted. So here's the end part of my introduction. Again, it begins with the word reformation, and I will just go ahead and read this through and post it up on my blog next to the introduction so that if you come across it and you just don't feel like reading all this text, you can just click the play button and listen to the introduction without having to sit there and read. Hugh Hewitt claims in his book blog that the Reformation came about largely from the invention of the printing press. It did, but it was those martyrs willing to take the fruits of the printing press, most notably the scriptures, and share them with the common men and women who made the invention of the printing press effective. These truth warriors who fought and died for the right to own and memorize scripture laid the foundation for the enlightenment that followed the Reformation. Like the Waldensians of old and the greatest reformer of all, John Wycliffe, who died fighting for the truth, I believe individual families have the power to break down the monopoly of allopathic medicine simply by walking away from it and being willing to live with the consequences of that action. What are those consequences? For our family, the consequences have not been too harsh, as we have lived in a home birth mecca here in Boulder, Colorado. But I believe it would be naive to think that families who give birth at home do not have any negative results. The point of focus for the past 200 years, at least in America, and lately more around the world, has been on the midwives, shutting them down, putting them out of practice, and in more extreme instances, in jail. But as the powers that be realize the scope and power of the free birth movement, I predict that they will attempt to intimidate individual families. The homeschooling movement in America has an interesting history. The pioneers of the 60s and 70s had some truly harrowing experiences as they attempted to free their children from the Marxist wasteland and teach them some truth and how to read. Like these pioneering parents who have largely had great success in education, I predict that the unassisted childbirth movement will grow exponentially as the truth about medical birth becomes more available to the average consumer, and parents refuse to cave to the pressure to spend the money for mothers and babies to be cut away from each other. I also predict that as soon as the medical profession perceives that our movement is strong enough that we are depriving them of money, the backlash to our efforts will be immediate and harsh. I believe an all-out war against free birth will be declared and carried out in the media, in the chat rooms, in the blogs, and on the front lines in communities as the social workers, police, and medical workers realize that a growing group of families are unwilling to purchase what the doctors have to sell. The term medical neglect should have chilling sensations associated with it. At least for me it does. However, because birth is a life or death matter for both the mother and the baby, the emotions tied to this movement are going to be heightened to a much higher degree than the homeschooling movement ever was. Home educators simply wanted to teach their own children. And while this has had a devastating impact on the monopoly of the educrats and their socialist vision for America, the birth wars are going to be some of the most vicious battles of the new millennium. George Lucas had it right when he claimed that the most compelling seduction for a man was the fear of his wife dying in childbirth. See Star Wars Episode 3. To avoid the possibility of this happening, most men have willingly and gratefully paid thousands in order to have the assurance that the lover, best friend, and companion will never die while walking through the valley of the shadow of death to bring a child into the world. I wrote my book, Elijah Birth, specifically for husbands to help them hash through all of the issues and hopefully come to a place where they feel more comfortable with home birth. You men may never feel completely comfortable with it, and that is okay. But if you are married to a woman who is determined not to suffer the indignity of being drugged, senseless, and then cut to pieces while she births your child, perhaps reading this book or one like it will help you feel better, help you to feel better about her passion for home birth. What have been the costs for the family because couples have been willing to give in to the seduction of trading birth security for birth freedom? I suppose only individual couples can start to calculate the pros and cons of that decision. And in order to do so, most couples have to step back and spend some quality time pondering just exactly what happened during previous births. For some, this is impossible, as the trauma surrounding the births have been so extreme, they are suffering from post-traumatic stress and don't remember anything about it. And just a little insertion here, I have known several couples throughout the years who absolutely could not remember anything about their births, and this is evidence that what happened was probably so traumatic to both the mother and the father that they just tucked it away to be dealt with at a later time. This is classic post-traumatic stress. Here's the rest of that paragraph. For others who are operating on a more conscious level, the answer is for one or both spouses to be sterilized in order not to have anything that horrific happen again. Some mothers just refuse to have sex ever again or abort the rest of their children. I read of one Christian father who, upon hearing of his wife's conception, personally drove her down to the abortion clinic to assure that she would not have to endure the abomination of medical childbirth again. Some birth-traumatized couples move into homosexuality. It seemingly solves many problems. The mother or father can be in a sexual relationship, but never have to worry about a baby being produced. I have known men so freaked out by watching their wives' hospital births, they cannot engage in any sexual conduct whatsoever. Whatever the consequences of medical childbirth, the fact is that for many families, the fallout is devastating and real. Waldensians, I'm not sure if I said that right. The word might be Waldensians or Waldensians. I'm not sure. And here's a little insertion. This is a story about a group of people who are willing to die for the truth. And there is a woman in my congregation here in Louisville, Colorado, who is a direct descendant of the Waldensians who came from Italy to America. And one time she gave a talk in church about her ancestors and how they were part of this group. And it was just so cool that this huge story that was a part of the introduction to my blog, I actually know someone who descended from these people. So here's this story. And this is from the book, How We Got the Bible, by Lennett Hadley Reed. Here's a story about a group of people who are willing to die in the pursuit of truth. It inspired me, and I hope it inspires you. Please compare the church of old to the church of modern medicine today as you read. Casting pearls before swine indeed. In the book, How We Got the Bible by Lennett Hadley Reed, a group of people called Waldensians formed in Europe. The story begins on page 52. The spread of Christianity to such lands as England proved in time to be one of the greatest challenges to the Roman Church. The Greek Church had continued its belief that knowledge was essential to salvation. Therefore, when peoples in other cultures were converted, translations were made into their language, such as Russian and Bulgarian. The Roman Church, on the other hand, did not encourage vernacular translations, even though the Latin Vulgate had itself been a translation into a language spoken by the people. Before time and changing language had turned it into a, quote, sacred language used only in church services. In fact, during the time of Pope Gregory VII, A.D. 1073 to 85, a policy against translations took shape. In a struggle with the Greek Church for influence in certain disputed territories, Gregory saw that promoting reliance upon Latin in these areas was to the Roman Church's political advantage. He also decided that it would be advantageous to create a sharper distinction between laity and clergy. The clergy thus became the teachers of the church, while the laity became receivers only. From Pope Gregory's time onwards, asserts one scholar, orthodox prejudice against lay knowledge of the Bible text hardened. So, insertion here. What was going on is that the Catholic Church did not want their members actually reading the text of the Bible. They wanted there to be a chasm between those who were in charge, who are called the clergy, who understood and read the scriptures and then interpreted them for the members of the church, and they didn't want the members actually reading the text of the Bible. Consequently, the stage was set for one of the greatest dramas in the history of man, the struggle over vernacular translations between a few courageous individuals and the Inquisition that swept Europe during the last centuries of the Middle Ages. In the earliest battles, the weight of advantage went definitely to the Inquisition. Sometime during the 1170s in southern France, one of the first skirmishes of this battle was enacted. According to one account, it began this way. A certain rich man of the city Lyons, called Waldo, was curious when he heard the gospel read in Latin, since he was not much lettered. He wanted to know what was said. Wherefore, he made a pact with certain priests, the one that he should translate to him the Bible, the other that he should write as the first dictated, which they did, and in like manner many books of the Bible, which, when the said citizen had often read and learned by heart, he sold all his goods, and despising the world, he gave all his money to the poor, and usurped the apostolic office by preaching the gospel, and those things which he had learned by heart. Waldo's preaching among the people consisted mostly of reciting passages from the scriptures in the common tongue. Evidently, he did not set out with the intent to oppose the church, but merely to enlighten the people. As eyewitnesses at the Lateran Council of 1179 wrote of Waldo's initial attempts to get church approval for his activities and of the church's negative reaction, we saw the Waldensians, supporters of Waldo, at the council celebrated at Rome under Pope Alexander III. They were simple and illiterate men, and they presented to the Lord Pope a book written in the French tongue, in which were contained a text and gloss on the Psalter, and on very many other books of both Testaments. These besought with great urgency that authority to preach should be confirmed to them, for they thought themselves expert when they were scarcely learned at all. So what they're saying here is that you got these illiterate dudes showing up, they're coming to the Pope saying, hey, we've got this translation of the Bible in French, and we want to preach, we want to be missionaries. And the elites of the Catholic Church, they didn't like that too much. So they said, the writer then voices feelings that became entrenched as argument against giving scriptures to the common man. In every small point of the sacred page, so many meanings fly on the wings of virtue. Such stores of wealth are accumulated that only he can fully exhaust them whom God has inspired. Shall not therefore the word given to the unlearned be as pearls before swine, when we know them to be fitted neither to receive it, nor to give out what they have received? Away with this idea, and let it be rooted out. The ointment ran down from the head, even to the skirts of his clothing. Waters flow from the spring, not from the mud of public ways. So these religious elites believed that not only were these simple people worthy to learn the sacred scripture texts, they couldn't understand them, and they were absolutely insulted that they would assume that they could become learned. But the Waldensians were not easily dissuaded from seeking scriptural knowledge. Like their peers, they were not lettered, nor had they access to many copies of scripture, but they overcame this obstacle by memorizing surprising lengths of scripture when they were given the opportunity. The Waldensians suffered because of their desire for knowledge. They were tried by the Inquisition, excommunicated, imprisoned, and burned as heretics. Their books were banned, and when found, burned. At their trials and in the tracts written against them, their great crime, as stated, was that they translated the New and Old Testament into the vulgar tongue, and this they teach and learn. For I have heard and seen a certain unlettered countryman who used to recite the book of Job word for word, and many others who knew the whole New Testament perfectly. So not only did they burn the books, as soon as they found out that these people were memorizing books of the Bible or even the whole New Testament, they'd kill them because that's how much they wanted to control the flow of information. All men and women cease not to teach and learn night and day. The workman who toils by day learn or teaches at night. They teach and learn without books, and even in leper houses. To those who excuse themselves, saying they cannot learn, they say, learn only one word a day, and in a year's time you will learn 300, and thus you will grow proficient. In spite of attempts to stifle it, the Waldensian movement and others similar to it spread into neighboring Italy and Spain, and upon their heels followed official pronouncements against their work, banning the preaching, reading, memorizing, or even possessing of scriptures. Penalties for disobedience were extremely severe. According to one Inquisitor General's record, in an area near Toulouse, France, 930 sentences against heretics were pronounced during a period of 15 years, and 114 heretics were destroyed by flames. But even as the Inquisition tried to stamp out the Waldensian movement in France, Italy, and Spain, the hunger for scripture cropped up elsewhere, this time in England and Germany. The movement in England began in the mid-1300s. Unlike the Waldensian movement, which was begun by those totally outside the church's power structure, though later some clergy members joined in, the English movement was spearheaded by one of the most prominent and respected scholars and clergymen of his age, John Wycliffe. And again, this is from the book How We Got the Bible by Lennett Hadley Reed, pages 52 to 55. And this is from the chapter that's titled Glimmers of Light in Darkness. And this book was published by Deseret Book Company, and it was written in 1985. I have a copy of it, but I've Googled it and tried to find it on the web and on Amazon, and it's almost impossible to find this book. I need to get a drink. I love reading the story of these commoners who were willing to die in order to learn some scripture by heart. Like these early Christians, modern families need to understand that the power structures currently in place have the ability to control certain aspects of our lives, that if we are rebellious and disobedient to current medical dogma, can lead to us losing certain precious freedoms and the rights of self-determination. Families have had children taken away, lives ruined, and mothers and babies have been forced to have various medical procedures performed on them, all in the name of good medical care, when an obstetrician decided it was time for the baby to be born, or the mother to be sectioned, or the baby to be incarcerated in the NICU. I want to challenge you who are reading this, so like the Waldensians of old, we should take upon ourselves the risk and the challenge of learning for ourselves how to create healthy babies, birth them at home, and create a wonderful life for ourselves and our families completely cut off from the medical model of healthcare. Why? Because, like the church during the years of the Inquisition, we have a group of professionals who have set themselves up as the only way or means of making a healthy child. The fact that no allopathic doctor is educated in prenatal nutrition is enough of a reason for parents to become educated and learning for themselves the facts about how to build a healthy baby. The absolute best way to learn these principles is to eat the Brewer Pregnancy Diet every day for healthy pregnancy. If you read no other book, put out no other effort as a mother, it will be the absolute best investment of your time, talents, and energy as a woman attempting to create a beautiful life for yourself and your family. And just another insertion, there are several books on the Brewer diet available on the internet. Tom Brewer was a doctor back in the day, practiced during the 50s, 60s, 70s, and then moved onto the internet working a phone bank for women calling him. He ran a practice where his pregnant women had literally a 0% rate of toxemia and preeclampsia and HELLP syndrome. These women were well-nourished, and that was the key to all of them having healthy babies, carrying them to term, and not having to deal with the prematurity issue. So the proof is in the pudding. There have been actual studies that have been done trying to debunk the Brewer medical diet. There have been web pages and blog posts written trying to say it's all a bunch of quackery. I even had one woman personally confront me in a chat room saying that the only reason why the Brewer medical diet was formed was to make the parents of premature babies feel guilty. I really didn't know what to say to that woman, but as I read it, I thought, who would do that? Who is sick enough that they would go out there and try to create some diet and then teach other people about it just to make parents of premature babies feel guilty? I mean, that's nuts. Those of us who are talking about it and promoting it are just trying to help people learn that when you eat this healthy, high-protein diet and get plenty of rest and stay well hydrated, make sure you don't get too thirsty and get lots of rest, you're going to have a healthy baby. It's an equation. It's 2 plus 2 equals 4, you know, and nutrition is the key that will open the lock to a healthy baby. Here's the rest of the introduction. Everyone always says that a healthy baby is all that matters. Why don't you and your family take personal responsibility to learn for yourself the facts of what makes for a healthy baby and pregnancy? When you pay an obstetrician who, like the priests of old, stands up as a barrier between the consumer and the truth, who has absolutely zero education in these principles and has only been taught the drug and surgical interventions that can be utilized when nutritional deficiencies leave a woman prone to toxemia, etc., you miss a tremendous opportunity to grow. And like the Waldensians of old, learn the truth for yourself. When parents forego the nutrition information and disease results, the mounting bills can quickly devastate even the most prudent home budget. Ignorance of proper nutritional needs during pregnancy creates a domino effect that can take a whole family down. The physical, emotional, and financial devastation is real. But if you do not take the time and effort to do this and persist in the sick, codependent situation that currently is manifested in the prenatal care of our obstetricians, the long-term result could be a reality where all traces and memories of what is real and normal in childbirth is completely bastardized, and the human family has no memory or ability to birth our young without drugs and surgery. The solution? Knowledge of true natural principles of nutrition, exercise, relaxation, and adequate training in the mechanics of birth. Sure, it will take some effort, and you will have to work in your kitchen. I spend most of my time as a mother shopping for groceries, cooking those groceries, eating the meals produced, and cleaning up afterward. But I promise you, as much as you put into this is exactly what you will get out of it. The results will astound you, and the gratification of enjoying the personality of a child who has been fully nourished in the womb is unlike any high a mother can experience. Conversely, the hellish day-to-day life that results from living with a child who has been built on junk food and drugs, it's something that is increasingly being experienced by parents all over America. Good parents, honest-hearted people, have had serious thoughts of giving their own children up for adoption because of the nightmare that has been thrust upon them by the medical traditions of parents and grandparents and the false sense of security so many feel because they have passed all personal responsibility over to the professionals and given up their birthright of empowered living. I think many people look at the money they are spending on medical care, that polished medical degree framed on the wall, and considering the years of education the doctor has experienced, they figure the obstetrician knows something about how to build a healthy child. Wrong. They have been taught nothing about nutrition, and quite often scoff at those of us who talk about it being the most important factor and the health of a child. Any portion of your life that makes it impossible for you to cook nourishing foods while you are pregnant and nursing, and whatever else you are spending your time on, whether it be a career, schooling, volunteering, crafts, watching television, shopping, etc., any interruption that makes it impossible for you to create nourishing meals for yourself and your family should be thoughtfully replaced with purposeful kitchen work. The majority of a mother's time should be spent on nourishing herself and her children with whole foods, especially when the children are under the age of 3. I'm going to read that paragraph again because I had a little coughing fit. And this paragraph to me is the heart of my blog and of this introduction. My number one message to mothers is get back in your kitchen. Any portion of your life that makes it impossible for you to cook nourishing foods while you are pregnant and nursing, and whatever else you're spending your time on, whether it be a career, schooling, volunteering, crafts, watching television, shopping, etc., any interruption that makes it impossible for you to create nourishing meals for yourself and your family should be thoughtfully replaced with purposeful kitchen work. The majority of a mother's time should be spent on nourishing herself and her children with whole foods, especially when the children are under the age of 3. And one more little insertion. You only have control over your child's diet until they're about 4. After that, it's pretty much all over. If you can get them to eat whole foods between the ages of 4 and 15, all power to you. It has truly been the greatest challenge of my mothering to try and get those tweens to eat healthy food. They love junk food. They want to eat what their friends are eating. They want to go out and eat junk at the fast food restaurants. But if you can lay a foundation of health when you are pregnant and breastfeeding those little ones, they'll come back to it. I've watched my older kids come back to healthy eating. Oh, Mom, this is so good. Yeah, this is what I feel so much better when I eat this way. And ultimately, each individual has to own their diet and own what they put into their own body. But if you will just do this until your kids are about 4 years old, that foundation of health will last them for the rest of their lives. And you can prevent so much horror coming into your life if you will take on this challenge. I'm going to go back to the introduction. The next heading is a prophet's prediction. Quote, growing evil. Brigham Young was the second prophet of the church I belong to, and he had a way with words. In 1996, I discovered this little-known quote from the Journal of Discourses in the amazing book, Joseph Smith and Herbal Medicine. Brigham said, "Would you want doctors? Yes, to set bones. We should want a good surgeon for that, or to cut off a limb. But do you want doctors? For not much of anything else, let me tell you. Only the tradition of the people lead them to think so. And here is a growing evil in our midst. It will be so in a little time that not a woman in all Israel will dare to have a baby unless she can have a doctor by her. I will tell you what to do, you ladies, when you find you are going to have an increase. Go off into some country where you cannot call for a doctor and see if you can keep it. I guess you will have it, and I guess it will be all right, too. Now the cry is, send for a doctor. If you have a pain in the head, send for a doctor. If your heel aches, I want a doctor. My back aches, I want a doctor. The study and practice of anatomy and surgery are very good. They are mechanical and are frequently needed. Do you not think it is necessary to give medicine sometimes? Yes, but I would rather have a wife of mine that knows what medicine to give me when I am sick than all the professional doctors in the world. Now let me tell you about doctoring, because I'm acquainted with it and know just exactly what constitutes a good doctor in physic. It is that man or woman who, by revelation, or we may call it intuitive inspiration, is capable of administering medicine to assist the human system when it is besieged by the enemy called disease. But if they have not that manifestation, they had better let the sick person alone. I will tell you why. I can see the faces of this congregation, but I do not see two alike. And if I could look into your nervous systems and behold the operations of disease from the crowns of your heads to the soles of your feet, I should behold the same difference that I see. And your physiognomy, there would be no two precisely alike. Doctors make experiments, and if they find a medicine that will have the desired effect on one person, they set it down that it's good for everybody. If you didn't notice, Brother Brigham just outlined the absolute principle behind the double-blind studies of our current medical mess. But if it is not so, for upon the second person that medicine is administered to, seemingly with the same disease, it might produce death. If you do not know this, you have not had the experience that I have. I say that unless a man or woman who administers medicine to assist the human system to overcome disease understands and has that intuitive knowledge by the Spirit that such an article is good for that individual at that very time, they had better let him alone. Let the sick do without eating. Take a little of something to cleanse the stomach, bowels, and blood, and wait patiently, and let nature have time to gain the advantage over the disease. Suppose, for illustration, we draw a line through this congregation and place those on this side where they cannot get a doctor, without it is a surgeon, or for 30 or 50 years to come, and put the other side in a country full of doctors, and they think they ought to have them. And this side of the house that has no doctor will be able to buy up the inheritance of those who have doctors and overrun them, outreach them, and buy them up, and finally obliterate them. And they will be lost in the masses of those who have no doctors. I know what some may say when they look at such things, but that is the fact. Ladies and gentlemen, you may take any country in the world. I do not care where you go. And if they do not employ doctors, you will find they will beat communities that employ them all the time. Who is the real doctor? That man who knows by the spirit of revelation what ails an individual, and by the same spirit knows what medicine to administer. That that is the real doctor. The others are quacks. That was Brigham Young, Journal of Discourses, Volume 15, pages 225 to 226. Just one sec while I get a drink. I believe that when the prophet called doctor-attended birth evil, he meant what he was saying. He also predicted that a time would come when no mother in Israel, the members of our church refer to ourselves as the House of Israel, would give birth without a doctor by her side. So he knew where we were heading, even in the 19th century. I suppose we can safely say that day has arrived, and I would like to suggest that is the day after that day, since most of the mothers I know who are into home births are in fact members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Pregnancy and birth education. I was a certified Bradley teacher for 8 years. During that time, I did little else but take care of my family and study and teach natural childbirth in every spare moment. During my third pregnancy, I made the determination that prenatal care was largely a waste of my time, and I decided to go solo with my fourth pregnancy. During the roller coaster ride that has been our life these past 10 years since I informed my husband that I would no longer be using doctors to help me when pregnant and birthing, I have learned some things about the politics of birth. It is these types of insights that I would like to share with you, the reader. If anything I write can be of benefit in helping you to gain the confidence to take personal responsibility for your own health and the health of your family, and if you too decide after much prayer that you want to begin the process of weaning away from the medical profession, this blog is for you. Summary. So, in my writings, I will be promoting free birth, encouraging you to become a libertarian, conservative, neocon Republican. I believe we who live in democracy have a sacred trust to help. Even with military force, freedom lovers all over the planet to build a democratic society where they live. I will attempt to convince you to question the better and better living through chemistry, and will share links, quotes, thoughts, and insights into why all of these issues together are important for the future. It's true. I am a Mormon, birth activist, neocon, free birth, psychiatric survivor, stay-at-home mother of five, who is politically active, likes to write, and is interested in influencing others to live a more natural lifestyle and give birth at home. I have a picture in my mind of my readers. I see a nonconformist who has felt a deep sense of distrust about authority figures, especially those who wear white coats and dispense drugs like candy. I see a woman who is a reader, thinker, and young, who has spent most of her life skipping to the beat of a different drummer. If you have just graduated from high school or college and are thinking about marrying your sweetheart, but you are frightened by the domestic messes around you, you are the woman I will picture in my mind every day while I type. If you have watched your own mother and grandmother drugged, sliced and diced by the medical profession, and you are feeling scared, if you have listened to your best friend describe in gory detail the ins and outs of her most recent C-section, if you have watched antidepressants throw your neighbor, your aunt, your mother, your brother, or your child into psychosis or a diabetic condition, if you are feeling confused about whom to vote for, about what the war on terror is all about, or don't have the time or energy to do too much research on political issues, if you have lost custody of your kids, experienced a divorce, or lost your credibility as a sane person after antidepressant use, you are the person I want to be reading this blog. I will have a picture of you in my mind every day, 5 days a week, as I write and link and share. I don't mind if the menfolk want to give it a read, too. I would love to have some young husbands and fathers tune in occasionally. But just know that I do have an agenda. It is clear to me. And now it should be clear to you, the reader. If you feel the need to spam me or castigate me for my heartfelt beliefs, save it. I have heard every argument possible against my worldview. My liberal friends have tried to convert me to the Democratic Party. My medically minded friends have tried to convince me to have a hospital birth. And my friends who belong to other churches have tried to share with me that horrid Under the Banner of Heaven book and convince me of the error of my spiritual beliefs. And it goes on and on and on. I know what I am about. I know what I believe. I know what I have studied. And I know what is important to me, building healthy babies and creating a beautiful, happy life for my husband and children is what I am all about. If you would like to join me in this quest, please log on daily to the Natural Family blog to share in the coming adventure. Please note that I would love to get thoughtful, well-written responses to this blog. If you feel so inclined to write and you're nice, I may even write back or share a quote or link from you on the blog. I had to turn off my comments and trackbacks because of horrifying spam. If you are snarky or mean or feel the need to, quote, set me straight by sharing a particularly horrific birth story in which medicine once again heroically saved the life of your wife and baby, please just keep your thoughts to yourself and let's live and let live. I have had many of these types of arguments shoved in my face over the past few years, and I am not writing this blog for you. If you feel that doctors, drugs, and surgery save the day in your particular birthing situation, I am not here to argue or convince you otherwise. I am simply sharing with the young mothers on the web that they do indeed have a choice in how they give birth, and they do not need to offer up their precious bodies upon the altar of modern medicine to be drugged and cut during the most vulnerable moment in life. Final thoughts. Finally, I would like to leave you with an inspiring passage from one of my favorite books, Zheng Tang's biography, Wild Swans, which is perhaps the best expose on communist thought and living that has been written. For me, the climax of the book takes place in a library that has been devastated during the Cultural Revolution in China. Here's an excerpt from page 473 from the chapter, Learning English in Mao's Wake. Being alone in the library was heaven for me. My heart would leap as I approached it, usually at dusk, anticipating the pleasure of solitude with my books, the outside world ceasing to exist. As I hurried up the flight of stairs into the pastiche classical-style building, the smell of old books long stored in airless rooms would give me tremors of excitement, and I would hate the stairs for being too long. With the help of dictionaries, which some professors lent me, I became acquainted with Longfellow, Walt Whitman, and American history. I memorized the whole of the Declaration of Independence, and my heart swelled at the words, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and those about men's unalienable rights, among them liberty and the pursuit of happiness." These concepts were unheard of in China and opened up a marvelous new world for me. My notebooks, which I kept with me at all times, were full of passages like these, passionately and tearfully copied out end of quote. For those of you who are passionate Jung readers, she finished her Mao biography. I have not read it yet, but I will review it once I get the chance. I've been waiting years for her to finish this book, and here's an insertion to my introduction. I read that Mao biography. It also was one of the best books I've ever read. And if you want to understand communism and China, take the time to read Mao, The Unknown Story. It's just one of the most incredible books out there. I consider myself an American patriot, yet I have not taken the time or the effort to memorize the Declaration of Independence. I think this powerful witness by Zhang is one of the most eloquent and passionate autobiographies that has ever been written. This history of three daughters of China during the 20th century in Mao's communist hell should be required reading for every person in America, especially our Marxist professors. My prayer in taking the time to write over these coming months and years is that you who are reading will be able to break down the walls in your own mind about American history, the founding documents, the direction we are headed as a people with our creeping socialism and flat-out communism in some quarters, and that you will educate yourself on the facts of the matter and confidently join those who are working diligently in our world to spread democracy and freedom. Don't think for a minute that it is too complex for you to learn or understand. With a little time and effort, you can build a foundation strong enough to withstand any political storm, which can include participating in an online political chat, a conversation with a politically minded liberal friend, or an argument with your teenage son or daughter who is also being carefully indoctrinated in Marxist studies. A great place to start would be to read The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen, then Radical Son by David Horowitz, followed by The Case for Democracy by Natan Sharansky. Think of these books as your textbooks for the next few weeks. Then take the time to go back and read some of the excellent articles, books, and peruse a few of the political websites I have linked to. As you shake out the propaganda that was carefully placed in your head during your growing up years, please know that the truth will set you free politically, and you will never be confused about who to vote for again. Some of my natural childbirth friends have truly questioned how I could vote for George Bush knowing that pharmaceutical companies gave so much money to his campaign. My response is simply that I believe he is an honest man, and I feel more safe with him as president than I ever did with Bill Clinton or a pathological liar like John Kerry as the commander-in-chief. The nature of politics today is that most politicians on both sides of the aisle are heavily funded by Big Pharma. Ultimately, if parents are going to break free from the medical monopoly, that is something they're going to have to do for themselves. With a Republican at the head of the government, I feel confident that freedom principles overall will be more honored and respected than if a Democrat was president. At this point in our history, I believe it is far more important we have an honest person in the White House. Medical freedom will come as families get educated, but no medical freedom can happen if we are completely socialized in America or if our American cities are lying under piles of rubble from nuclear terror. If you're still reading this monstrosity of an intro, pat yourself on the back. I promise to keep the blog entries filled with great links to help you down the path to the sovereign family lifestyle. And remember, healthy families make a healthy world. Jenny Hatch. Now, that's the end of my introduction. I've only got a few minutes left on this show. And, you know, in the last 5 years since I wrote it, I read everything. I don't just read conservative websites. I'm on the liberal sites. I read the libertarian stuff. I'm on InfoWars, and I really try to hear all voices. You know, President Obama said the other day at a University of Michigan commencement speech, he said, go read the Huffington Post. Don't just listen to Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck. So I've been doing what the president says. I've been listening to all those voices. And I don't claim to know everything. I don't claim to have all the answers. But I do know that the Holy Spirit has guided me to family sovereignty in my own individual life, in my family's life. My husband told me a couple weeks ago when he was talking to his brother and they were talking about how they'd all gotten the H1N1 vaccine, he's like, I just can't believe how different their whole mindset is from how we are, you know. And it comes with taking the time to just read books and ponder and pray and really try to listen to what we're being guided to do. And, you know, for me, growing up as a sickly child, I felt that the greatest thing I could offer to my own kids was a healthy body. And, you know, I don't know that they're any healthier than if I had just done traditional medicine or whatever. I didn't go that route, so I can't compare. But they're sure as heck healthier than I was as a child. And I have hopes that because of what I did with them, with natural birth and breastfeeding and feeding them whole foods, that maybe they'll do that with their own kids. And maybe the next generation will be a little bit healthier than they were, and so on. Instead of going the opposite direction like so many families are, where you've got these families who come from line after line after line of healthy parents and grandparents, and then all the kids are sick with just life-threatening and toxic conditions. And you have to ask yourself, where is it coming from? Is it all genetic? Is it all just chance? You know, that's where you need to step back and say, okay, what can I as an individual do? And I want to testify to you, you can do a lot. You can take your life into your own hands and try to make it better. And I can tell you that because I made that choice for myself, I'm not the healthiest person in the world. I don't ever claim that. I don't claim to even be the most mentally well person on the planet. But I am healthier than I would have been if I had been eating psychiatric drugs for the past 22 years as a huge part of my daily diet. I know that for a fact. And I just want to say that if you will decide for yourself to start going down this alternative path, you will be able to reach a level of self-determination, hope, and brightness for the future that will not come from just following the herd and doing what everybody else is doing. And that's my final challenge to any of you who are taking the time to listen to this, is just listen to your heart and then follow it. I never would have assumed that me following the path that I have would have taken me to a level of health that was just almost inconceivable 20 years ago. I was so sick, and my body just felt like it was absolutely out of control, my body and my mind. And through just some diligent effort and the daily practices of getting enough sleep and staying well hydrated and making sure I get enough protein and I eat my veggies and grind up fresh grains and cook them every day, those have been the keys to me finding a level of wellness that was impossible for me to imagine. And, I just want to finish with this, just this final challenge. I've read it several different places that the number one indicator of your body's health is how well your body functions sexually. So I'm going to say that again. If your body functions sexually normally with your intimate life with your husband, that is the best indication of how healthy you are as a woman. And your breastfeeding and birthing is part of your sexual life. You have to understand that when we are hormonally connected up in the proper way with our husbands and babies, this is what leads to ultimate health for us as women. And that when other entities come in and frustrate those natural processes, we bottle feed with formula, we give birth with lots and lots of drugs and surgery, those hormonal interruptions affect every other part of our health. And when you can grasp your hormonal connectedness and protect it and keep it free from all that outside intervention, that is when you will reach the fullness of joy in terms of how your body functions and how healthy you are and how mentally well you are. It is when those processes are frustrated. And for me, those frustrations came in the form of sexual abuse, an unnatural association with other people in my life, completely traumatic and, you know, toxic and evil, and left so much debris in my system. But when you live in a situation where you are hormonally connected with your husband, and then your children are properly welcomed with this proper hormonal intricacy that takes place while you give birth naturally, and then you're able to bond with that baby and then breastfeed that baby for an extended period of time, as long as you and the baby feel comfortable and want to do it, that is when you reach a fullness of joy with your body and your soul. And that's my final testimony, and that is the work that I'm striving to do with this blog, is to educate mothers on what it means to have everything lined up correctly with their hormonal system, and then you have wellness and joy. I'm going to say goodbye now. My voice is about to give out anyway. I'm not used to talking. I'm a reader, so I don't spend a lot of time talking every day, but God bless you. I pray that you'll be able to find joy and happiness in your life.